Welcome back to Occasional Randomness. I'm your host, Eric Scott, and joining me, as always, my fellow co-host, someone who's never crashed a wedding, at least as far as I know, Jason Johnson.
No, I'm just here for the cake, but Eric, there's this crazy lady wandering around in the background. Why is she cooking chowder? I'm confused.
I don't know. I thought she was with you.
Maybe we have a crasher after all.
Yeah. More on that later as we dissect what we're going to dissect here in a second. But we finally made it to the end of season 3 of Farscape. Yay. And I looked it up. We started season 3 back in October 2022. So it's been like 18 months, which we had some breaks there with things, but.
Well, we did also start doing single episodes instead of double. So it's changed it up a little bit.
Yeah, so we have kind of extended things a little more than before because we have lots more things to talk about. Speaking of which, so besides recapping and talking about the season finale of season 3 of Farscape, season 3, episode 22, Dog with Two Bones, we're also going to do our season recap of season 3, now that we're finished, talk about the high and low points. And if that wasn't enough, after that, we'll be discussing the first 5 episodes of season 3, the final season of Star Wars The Bad Batch.
So buckle up. We'll be here for a bit.
So settle in for this giant-sized episode of Occasional Randomness.
Yeah, this is like one of those annuals where you actually like read one side, then you flip it over, and there's another comic book on the back.
Yeah, and I'm sure when we get into later also talking about X-Men 97, it's coming out in like a couple weeks, then we'll have that Bad Batch and Farscape. So, oh boy. But hey. Sometimes you get peak TV, sometimes you don't. And right now, we're there. So,
yeah, I mean, we were discussing before show that it's going to be kind of doldrums of Marvel for a little while. So enjoy it while we got it, right?
Yep. Embrace it while it's there because it's coming and going. So. And as always, our plea to the users there, the listeners, if you like what we do, please give us a like or a review wherever you feel like. Or help spread the word and tell your other friends or online people you know about us. We would appreciate the extra viewership or listenership because it's an audio podcast, not a video podcast. So that would be a listenership.
You can watch your screen as much as you want. We're not judging.
Yeah. If you watch the YouTube version of this, which it posts through the Podbean thingy, it does have like a little waveform kind of thing. So you can watch it. Just not really interesting to watch, but it's something to watch on YouTube, so there you go. All right, so this is an even numbered episode, so that's you, and I apologize in advance because this was a long plot filled episode, which again we'll discuss after the fact, but it's a lot of recap. So
well, we get that said, here we go. So Farscape season 3 episode 22, Dog with Two Bones. So we start out with John in a dress shop, and Aaron walks down a catwalk in a white wedding dress, saying it doesn't work. John says it works all right, just not for the wedding. Aaron then models another, more sensual, somewhat more low-cut dress, and this time John perks up and says that if she wears this, somebody's definitely going to marry her.
Which better be Creighton, but anyway.
We'll get to that later.
Yeah.
So cut back to John in the real world. That wasn't the real world, evidently. Who's still writing equations all over his hands. Chien is with him and says that his world can't be that hard to adjust to. He just needs to ask her. An old lady interrupts, offering them food. They stay silent, and she says perhaps Aaron wouldn't have liked his plata anyway. Back in the dress store, John hands over his credit card and tells Aaron to do it. She's reluctant, but she tries to ask the lady behind the counter to charge it. John has to take over when the lady doesn't understand her, and Aaron, frustrated and embarrassed that no one ever understands her English, utters, "This whole frillin' planet needs a translator, microbes." John tries to comfort and encourage her that she's doing fine, as half the time, no one even understands him. Cut to Chiana, who asks the old woman why she didn't leave with the others, and John asks, "Who is that woman?" Chiana tells him that she thought she was with him. Out of the window, John spots another Leviathan, and Pilot tells him that they've arrived at the Leviathan's sacred burial place. Aaron helps Dargo pack his stuff onto his ship, asking how much he's taking, and telling him he could resupply during the journey. Dargo says that revenge is best served immediately, and she says he'll get himself killed. Rigel says they all will, but at least they can do it on their home planets. Dargo says he can't believe Krayst sacrificed himself to destroy the command carrier, and Eren laments Talon's death. Back to John and Chiana. Chiana asks John what he'll do when they bury Talon, and he replies that he'll carry on working on wormholes. Suddenly, Chiana shudders with a vision, just as Pilot tells everyone to brace for collision, as the other Leviathan is charging Moya.
Yeah, so these visions are like, how about a little more advanced warning than like, oh, I think I'll crash.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's an early warning system, just only 3 seconds early. The other Leviathan rams and scrapes itself across Moya's hull, leaving her badly injured. Pilot says that Moya's neural cortex is impossible to target so successfully unless by another Leviathan. This was no accident on the other Leviathan's part. Apparently, its actions have something to do with Talon. Rigel complains and asks who the frail the old woman is when we see another vision with Eren throwing her bouquet at the wedding. Rigel is hovering by the cake when John is snapped out of it by the real Rigel telling him to pay attention, as this is serious. John tells him that the plan to fix Moya is good. In another vision, a euphoric Dargo is with two girls, one on each arm, and congratulates Eren and John, joking that tonight John is the second luckiest man in the universe. Back in reality, Pilot tells everyone that the rogue Leviathan has three offspring, which were all killed by the Peacekeepers. She will not let Talon, who was part Peacekeeper tech, be buried here. Pilot has yet to hear from the other pilot, but keeps trying. Jewel is with Eren working on her prowler and asks when they get out of this if she's still planning to look for an ex-Peacekeeper unit. Eren doesn't answer, and Jewel says that they assassinate people, to which Eren says they protect people against things like terrorism. Jewel wants to give her some advice, but Eren says she's not tied to John in any way. Jewel adds that in the short time she's known Eren, she's changed so much, and she shouldn't go backwards again. Assassinating people seems like going backwards. Eren asks Jewel to melt something. When she answers with what, there's no power yet, Eren pulls her hair and makes her scream, which quickly melts the metal. Chiana tells John that it looks like Moya will be okay. She says that what she said about not wanting him to go with her wasn't exactly so, but he says it's cool, not to worry. He has a vision of her in a hotel room, dressed up all sexy and flirting with him. Non-vision Chiana says that she'd love for him to go with her, but he'd look so much like a peacekeeper, not a good thing for what she plans to do. The old woman then offers to talk to the other Leviathan for them as a negotiator. Chiana tells her to stick to cooking and for John to deal with her. John gets up and walks towards her, but she suddenly blows some herbs in his face and he shouts that he can't see. She tells him to go to the truth, ignore it, and risk all. She whispers something in his ear as he sees Eren as his bride, but then he sees waiters at the wedding getting shot, causing him to start shooting back. But in reality, Dargo comes in, just escaping being shot, and tongues him, asking the old woman what she did. She says perhaps a slight misjudgment of his weight, and Dargo knocks her out. Pilot tells Dargo and Eren that the rogue Leviathan starved her pilot to death, and is threatening to attack again if they don't take Talon's remains and leave. Rigel says that they should go, and with Moya injured, Eren agrees, but Pilot insists that Moya will not go because Talon deserves to be buried here. Back in John's vision, he's listening to Eren and his dad talking, and she tells that Jack that she's miserable here, and John just doesn't see it, and she wonders when he's going to wake up. He says he's awake, and in reality, Eren pulls him up. She tells John that Moya can't beat the rogue, but they can't convince Moya to leave, so Rigel and Chiana are trying to convince her. The old woman, now tied up, again offers to help, but John asks who she is.
Yeah, there's a recurring theme here, but we'll get to that.
Chiana tells Moya that everyone is concerned about her plan, and that she once asked Zan how she got along so well with Moya. Zan told her by being honest, no matter what. Chiana says she thinks Moya should bury Talon wherever she wants, and the other Leviathan can get out of their way. John sees a vision of Chiana, still on the bed, and asks her what all the stuff is. She tells him that she went shopping, well, shoplifting, and that she got to know the boys a little better earlier. John asks why she has to sleep with all his friends, and she just continues to flirt with him, complaining that Earth is too repressed, when Jack comes in. She runs up to him and kisses him, Jack hugging her and just shrugs, telling a disapproving John, well, your mother's been gone for such a long time, prompting John to say that's just still not right.
Yep.
Yeah. Back in reality, Dargo says that he disagrees and Chiana has a point. His ship has enough firepower to kill the rogue. John doesn't think that Moya will let them actually kill one of her species when Pilot tells him that Moya is not the first to be attacked by the rogue. Three other Leviathans have been killed and even more injured. It is now clear that the rogue Leviathan has gone insane, and Moya begins to defend herself on her own. Pilot says that Moya understands the grief of losing a child, but has decided that this Leviathan's behavior is unacceptable. So Moya asks the crew to kill the rogue. Dargo's ship and Aaron's prowler are prepared to take on the rogue Leviathan. John tells Jewel to be there for Chiana, since she helped deliver Talon, so she shouldn't have to bury him alone. Dargo tells Aaron not to make any errors, but Aaron says she doesn't make errors. Jewel goes up to Dargo and asks if he's okay with killing another living being, to which he just hisses through his teeth. John tells Aaron to be careful, but she replies that she doesn't have to fly with Dargo. Dargo, John, and Aaron leave Moya as she enters the sacred area, with the rogue following to attack. Dargo tells John to keep the ship steady so he can shoot. Aaron says that the other Leviathan is bigger than Moya, so the best she can do is annoy it. John has another vision and tells Dargo that he knows it's hard for him, as everyone thinks he's a freak, prompting Dargo to say hi to two kids nearby fishing, who reply that they don't think he's a freak. The vision intersperses with real-time conversation in Dargo's ship, as John tells him not to kill Mactan. In the vision, Dargo says that all he wants is revenge, and he's sorry that Aaron is going to leave him, but not to take it out on him. In reality, John says it's not just Aaron, they're all leaving. Dargo tells him not to begrudge them their dreams, but John replies that it's some dream, killing a man. Dargo says that he should go straight to Earth, but John says he can't, the peacekeepers would follow. He and Dargo continue to argue, both in the vision and on the ship. Moya ejects Talon's remains as a weeping Chiana attempts to say some final words, but is too grief-stricken to do so. As Jewel holds her, Rigel takes over and gives Talon a fitting eulogy. He, a joy to his mother and a credit to both his species. The rogue starts to charge at the remains, intending to disperse them, so Aaron launches an attack, shooting the rogue with the prowler's weapons. This works, and the rogue leaves the remains and chases Aaron into position where Dargo could fire upon her. When the rogue is right in front, Dargo's ship fires a shot that completely envelops the rogue Leviathan before completely disintegrating her. Jewel asks if they got her, and then Aaron says that she's gone, completely. They stare in awe at the power of the destruction. Nothing at all remains. Rigel cheers that this means they're finally done. They're all unhurt, healthy, no one's trying to kill them, and they can finally go home. With the danger over, John visits the old woman and asks who she is. She was a prisoner of the peacekeepers, and he made them come back and rescue her escape pod after the command carrier imploded. So when the others got off, she stayed to repay her debt. John asks what she did to him, and she says that we all lie, but the lies that spew out do too much less damage than the lies that stay hidden. Crichton unties her restraints and sets her free. He says that back on Earth, when he was a kid, he would always dream of outer space. Yet now that he's here, all he dreams of is Earth. But lately, none of his dreams work. Her herb stripped away the lies, but he ran from it, and he's so tired of running. He asks her to show him again. She blows something in his face. He sees himself putting the ring on Aaron's finger. Then the two of them happily dance at the wedding reception, as in reality, he's performing the dance with the old woman. Again, she is seen whispering in his ear. Jack then cuts in to dance with Aaron. Next, everyone is seated, and all of Crichton's friends from Moya are in attendance, even Pilot. Clapping as John and Aaron kiss. Jack proposes a toast to his son and his new daughter, the new Mr. and Ms. Crichton, when he's suddenly shot in the head. John pulls his gun out in reality, but the old woman makes him see the truth and confronts his fear. The reception is stormed by peacekeeper troops, who one by one shoot all the guests. Pilot, Rigel, Dargo, Chiana, Jewel, and then Aaron are all killed. In the middle of the reception room, a model of Moya is blown to pieces, as well as the wedding cake. After the chaos, the majority of the guests are all lying dead. As John hovers in panic over a bleeding Aaron, she says not to worry about her. She's never felt better, before she dies in his arms. John is devastated and cries out for her when Scorpius comes in and kneels down next to him, asking him the obvious question. What did you expect? Returning to reality, John tells the old woman it's a nightmare. His life, his dreams, Earth, his friends, there are two things that are most important to him. However, he has tried to merge the two, but they're incompatible. Now he can't risk going to Earth, and his friends are all leaving. He's a dog with two bones. The old woman is confused, so John tells her the fable of a dog and its beloved bone, and how, while at a river, it tried to steal an identical bone from an identical dog, not realizing it was looking at its own reflection in the water. The dog opened its mouth, dropped the bone, into the water, and lost it forever. Crichton is like the dog. He tried to keep his friends on Moya, as well as his dream of returning to Earth. Like the dog, by trying to take too much, he's ended up with nothing. The old woman asks if a dog is smart enough to learn. If it could have only had one bone, which would it have wanted? John goes to the maintenance bay where Aaron is packing. He says that he's going with her. She's not leaving without him. She asks what he wants, and John says her. She tells him that it's not that easy for her. He died, she watched it, but he's still alive. She has to go. He tells her to say goodbye, but she says they don't say goodbye. John tells her that they do this time. If she goes, then comes back, he couldn't handle the in-between again. He says to say goodbye, so she says goodbye, Crichton, and walks off in anguish. John grabs her and then says, say his name is John. Say it to his face. She pushes him and tells him to guarantee that he won't die in her arms again, so he pushes back and tells her to guarantee that she won't die in his, to which she replies that she can by leaving. He asks if she loves John Crichton. Not the other, not him, but John Crichton. She says yes, and though she wishes to resist, they eventually kiss. He asks what it takes like, and she says, yesterday. He sighs and says that no one can compete with that. He is so much better dead. She tells him that she can't do this again. He tells her that he can't let go of the one thing he loves fly away in a crappy little ship. Aaron replies that if the fates mean for them to be together, they'll meet again. John replies that if it's up to the fates, then he'll toss a coin. She tells him to just make a wormhole and go home, and John replies that there is no home, there's only her. She then says it's too late for her, and he tells her that if she does this, they'll never see each other again. She asks if he loves Aaron soon, to which he says, beyond hope. And she says that don't make her say goodbye, and don't make her stay. Giving up, John walks away, and Aaron vents her sadness by kicking the pile of metal cases at her feet. John, hearing the commotion, stops and turns back, and they look across the room at each other. She kicks the fallen coin to him, and they walk back towards each other in slow motion. As John tosses the coin, the picture freezes, and we fade to black. Later, John is in his module, near Moya, miserable. One by one, he hears and sees snippets of the others saying their goodbyes. Dargo says that anything positive he will be because of John, his friend. Chenna tells him to never forget her, or that she loves him. Rigel says that of all the lesser species, he's grown to like his the best. The view pans around, and we see Aaron in the prowler. John remembers her saying that they're in the hands of fate now. They have to trust in that. Aaron begins to cry and tells John to fly safe, followed by goodbye, John Crichton, before her prowler fades into distance. Jewel calls John and asks if he's alive or out of fuel. He says that he's nearly out, and he's headed back to Moya. Harvey appears, hovering over his shoulder, seeing that the human subconscious is a fascinating place. Malleable, permeable, fallible. He asks John to guess what he found there, but John tells him to go away as he doesn't feel like talking right now. Harvey says that he'll honor John's wishes, but having chosen their partnership above all else, John's well-being is now irrevocably his. He says, my gift, and John hears the old woman whispering what she had before. She tells him to be forgiving, be kind. Her life, her world, on her time, he will know. Aaron is with child. John screams for old woman, who is still on Moya, and tells Pilot to put him through to Aaron. She's out of range, so he tells Pilot to go after her, but Jewel objects. The old woman grabs her, about to bite her ear, and says for Pilot to do as John says. John begs, and the pilot says he'll attempt to plot Aaron's course, and they'll leave as soon as he returns, when suddenly a wormhole opens just behind Moya and sucks her in. John says, you've got to be kidding me, as the camera pans out to show him stranded, out of fuel, and utterly alone in space.
Uh-oh.
A little bit of rough ending there. A little bit of trivia on this episode. Discounting flashbacks, this is the fifth episode in which Camp McCord appears as a fake version of Jack Crichton. Executive producer David Kemper is hiding under the table during the breakfast speeches. He was talking to Ben Browder and Claudia Black when the director yelled action, and he had nowhere to go.
Now that's funny.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. Melissa Jaffer makes her first appearance here as Dorante, the old woman, though her character would not be given a name until the third episode of next season. The script page that revealed Aaron's pregnancy was only given to the cast members and crew who required it. All the others stated that the revelation was, Aaron really loves you. Aaron's wedding dress is the same worn by Princess Catralla in the Look at the Princess episodes, Crichton's other marriage. Claudia Black found it in the wardrobe department and suggested it to Andrew Prowse. Crew members from every department helped move the pilot puppet up two flights of stairs to the location of the wedding breakfast. The idea for the coin flip was suggested by Claudia Black during discussions with Ben Browder, David Kemper, and Andrew Prowse. Aaron's dying line, "I've never felt better," is a deliberate echo of the other Crichton's death scene in Infinite Possibilities, Icarus Abides. And finally, this episode featured several deleted scenes, including ones establishing the elderly Leviathan, Elek, and the location of the Interior Colony, which interests Jewel. Other deleted scenes originate from John's vision and include Pilot working in a circus after being fired from MIT, Aaron shooting a truck in a crosswalk, Rigel hiring strippers for Crichton's bachelor party, and a sequence in which Dargo leads a conga line at the wedding reception.
Whew. Yeah. All right, take a breath.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what do you think about this one while I get some coffee?
Yeah, so I kind of have to admit, I think we'll talk about this too. This episode confused the frell out of me, to use a Farscape word. So was it the old woman giving John these visions of him marrying Aaron on Earth? But he was having the visions before the first time she blew that powder into his face, so I don't know, I have no idea. It was hilarious, though, that everyone keeps asking everybody, who's the old woman? And no one really follows up on that question or even bothers to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, she says she came from the command carrier and they rescued her and she wanted to stay on there to pay the debt. But then wouldn't they remember that? And why was she chained up? You know, if she was free and rescued, then why chain her back up again? So I'm completely confused. Obviously, there's more to it that we'll learn next season as, you know, from the trivia back there, you know, she stays around a bit. Which I do remember her from watching this, you know, 20 plus years ago. So she did make an impression on me. That's the other thing. I did like the idea of the Leviathan sacred burial space. That was kind of neat. And of course, like we saw last episode, everybody's following through, except for Crichton, on leaving or planning on leaving. Guessing they think all their problems are solved and no one's hunting them any longer. Or if they are, then they'll just die on their home planet. I don't know. You know, obviously, we'll see how long that lasts next season, since there's next season, and we, you know, they're not going anywhere that we know of. So yeah, lots of, What do you think about this one?
Yeah, so I'll echo a lot of what you said. This is another one of those episodes where I feel like I skipped ahead and was watching an episode maybe from a future season, because I kept thinking there has to be something in the between, right? I mean, the difference, and they've done that to us before, right? They've jumped, they've had, like, we've come out of one plot and jumped into another one, but man, they just left us and thrown us into this one, and we had to just try to figure it out the entire episode. I usually like unreliable narrator stories. That's one of my favorite, like, tropes, but this one was such a tone shift from that last episode. You know, I just didn't get into it. I did feel like some of the points you mentioned, I liked them, the graveyard, things like that, we'll get into, but overall, I spent the whole episode just lost, and as I'm sure we'll get to, you know, frustrated by the John and Aaron storyline, but yeah.
Yeah, it's like they knew this was the last episode of the season, and they maybe knew where they wanted to go next season, so let's just kind of jam it all into this episode, and we'll just sort it out later.
Yeah, I mean, they like you say, it's a lot of furniture moving, right? We finished up our two-parter, and we got the big climax for the season storyline, and now it's like, oh, but we ended here, but we've got one episode to actually end over here where we want to be, so jump. And it's like, that was just some stuff in the middle we missed. Sounds like they cut a lot of stuff too, so.
Yeah, because I mean, as you know, the never-ending recap, you know, it's a dense plot. There's lots of things going on that's important to mention and not gloss over, because they're hammering you with, you know, all these character bits, which of course is the great part of Farscape. You know, so that's wonderful. But yeah, the overall stuff, it's like did they cut too much? I mean, from the deleted stuff, it's just more kind of wedding, goofy wedding, alternate reality kind of things. But were the other things maybe that they cut to try to get all that in, plus, you know, his visions, plus people, you know, everyone's trying to leave, and then, oh, let's just throw in the, we have to wrap up the Talon plot line, so we're trying to bury him, and it's not just a, oh, he's buried, great, off we go. They had to make that more dramatic, so it's like, there's a lot of things going on that maybe one or two things didn't have to be, but then, I guess it had to be, because it's the end of the season, so it's like, they're stuck at, like, here's 37 things, go. So speaking of those 37 things, let's talk about.
Yeah. All right, let's go.
let's not go into in depth, but here let's talk about some of them. So we'll do the main plot, John and Aaron here in a second. But let's go through the other, I guess maybe two major-ish subplots, whatever you want to call them. Like we both said, we did like the concept of the Leviathan burial grounds, and it makes sense. I mean, they're living beings, so yeah, when they die, they can get quote unquote buried by other Leviathans or their crews, or if it's like some animals that like go to the place they want to die before they die, so they can die at that place. So, cool concept. We have our insane Leviathan who's hovering around there, who lost three of her offspring to peacekeepers and doesn't want, Talon's half peacekeeper remains there. Okay, makes sense. I get that. And apparently she's gone completely nuts and has killed other Leviathans. So yeah, she's definitely, cuckoo, gone, And we learn an interesting thing about Dargo's ship, his main weapon. That's a weapon. That's it d disintegrated like a whole Leviathan in one shot. Impressive. I guess a command carrier is too big.
Yeah.
Because been a short episode, to a short two-parter. Although, of course,
They were trying not
obviously,
to kill everybody, right?
yeah. I mean,
So.
you have to save the women and children and crazy old lady. Nobody knows how she got there. So, okay, fine.
Can you imagine her with Stark? I just thought about that. Anyway,
I don't know. He's still out there, so we got one more season.
I think my thought on it is that it feels like the point of this subplot was to just give us a new big gun, right? Because Talon's gone, Moya's not really weapons equipped. Yeah, they have a prowler, but they've had this comforting, presence of Talon and his combat capabilities. Yeah, sometimes he kills an entire hospital frigate, but overall they've had some protection, and he's gone. So now we've got Dargo's ship proving that it can now take out a Leviathan. So. They've got their own non-sentient attack ship that they can utilize. I think overall for the Talon burial plot, I'd have been happy if they'd have just with everything else we've got going on, they could have just like opened the episode with the funeral and Rigel's speech, and rolled on to all the other content. And I don't know that I'd have missed it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we had to see the big gun, so okay. They had the idea. They want to show the effects, which kind of reminded me of like Star Trek: The Motion Picture, like when V'ger like hit people, hit ships with the weapon, and it kind of like disintegrated them or like digitized them or something. It kind of looked like that. So that was kind of interesting.
Okay.
Just what looked like that. I guess how it like enveloped and like slowly like encompassed the Leviathan. So it's kind of neat.
Way to call me out on my lack of Star Trek knowledge for having not seen that.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, you never even saw the motion picture, did you? So,
Didn't.
okay. Well, it looks just like that. So,
Was just laughing. I'm like, you're calling me out.
yes, everybody. Jason has not seen the original series or some of the movies.
Yeah. I was a next gen guy, all right? That's kind of where I came in.
But anyway, if you go back and watch Star Trek: The Motion Picture, although I don't know why you would, because it's not good. Anyway, look at
See,
it's.
that's the stuff that keeps me from doing
Yeah, it's a 2.5 hour special effects episode because it was right after Star Wars, and they're all like, "Look, effects! It's a space show. We need effects." And like, okay, how about a plot and story? Anyway,
Yeah, all you really gotta do is spray paint some trash cans. Star Wars proved that,
right.
so.
Just put like a plunger and eye stalk on it, and oh, it's Doctor. All right, so then, so moving on, we got our next, I guess, the major plot subplot. The band's breaking up. Although, yeah, right. We know they're not really because there's the fourth season and everything. Although, as with most shows back then, it's like, did they sign for four seasons? Are some people going to go away? You don't know. So, they're all going their separate ways. They're all going to do what they did last time. Like I said, Rigel's going home. Dargo's going to find his wife's killer. Gina's going to Nabari Resistance and her brother, which would have been a great plot line to pursue when that happened, but I guess we'll never see it again. And that leaves Jewel, who's hanging around, I guess, because she doesn't have anywhere else to go.
Yeah,
And does.
they cut that plot from the story, right? So
Yeah.
now she's got to stay.
I guess they realize that, nah, she's just going to stay here, and who cares about her people anymore? We don't care. And Crichton's going to, of course, stay to work on wormholes because where else is he going to go? Except if he wants to go home, although more on that when we get here in a second. And then we have Aaron, which. Okay, so yeah, okay, yeah, fine. She doesn't want to be around the surviving Crichton and see him die again because it's, too much to handle. Understandable. I get it. We've been going back and forth with that for the last couple episodes or whatever. But she's off to join X Peacekeeper unit, so that's a thing. Since Joel says that's a thing, so I thought you couldn't get out of being a peacekeeper. Like, you're born there, that's what you did, and if you left, you're like Aaron, you got like excommunicated, or which I don't know how prevalent that was versus just outright killing you if you wanted to leave. So yeah, was her exile like different or worse than the normal way you go out as an ex-peacekeeper? Because I don't know, just that just seemed just a throwaway to get her out of there somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we had her and Krais as kind of our two really only peacekeeper exiles we came across, right? So that's an interesting thing. But that point just felt like it came out of nowhere, right? I mean, we didn't have any haven't had any mention of ex-peacekeeper unit before. She hasn't mentioned wanting to go join it. It just kind of was like, oh, everybody else is leaving. We've got to get Aaron off out of the way too, to keep the storyline of everybody leaving Crichton. So, yeah, I guess they had to come up with something, but again, that's the kind of stuff they should have like laid the had her like before the mission to blow up the carrier. They should have had her talking about I'm planning to go, and she just stuck around for one last mission or something. But this just made it kind of come out of nowhere. So, but again, it was all kind of furniture moving to get to the end where everybody left, right? That was kind of the goal.
Yeah, and we'll get to that also in a second. But yeah, so main plot. So, like Crichton said with the explaining the dog with two bones concept, he's trying to deal with two worlds, Earth and being in space, with not Earth-looking type people. And we have, of course, like I said, we got the direct title name drop. So we ex talk about, wait, he outright says dog with two bones, and he actually explains what that means. So we were right in one of our thoughts of what the episode title meant. So bonus points.
Yeah, actually, I think this is a first for us where not only did we get the name drop, we got a full-on like storytelling.
Yeah, like minute, 2 minute explanation of the storyline. So yeah, because trying to explain Aience, Uience, they had to actually show it to us because who wouldn't have got that? That means what does that mean? Yeah. But yeah, so he's having these visions, which maybe the woman gave him, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway. So, he's trying to have it all. He's trying to be back on Earth. He's marrying Aaron. All his friends from Moya are there too, which doesn't faze any Earthling at all at that reception or outside later when Dargo and him are walking down the pier and the kids are talking to him. So that's funny. It's like, hey, it's just some big lion-looking dude with tattoos and crazy things come out of his head. Yeah, it's fine. No problem. No one cares.
Well, they saw that series with Linda Hamilton, back in the day, so.
Yeah. So it all makes perfect sense. So yeah, I mean the vision's probably accurate. I mean if Scorpius were to follow through on his threat, he would come after John on Earth. Although yeah, I mean he would probably make it personal, but it would probably be after he, bombed the Earth, shot things up and all kinds of other things, not just crashing a wedding and just only killing people there. But hey, it's the overall idea that counts. That's his fear that he's going to lose it all, and he's trying to figure out how to deal with it, and not, have everything but not lose everything.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. He's been trying to get home, but yeah, we did kind of hit the midpoint of our two-parter just a couple episodes ago. Did just kind of Scorpio put the threat right out there, right? I mean, if anything happened, he'd come for Earth. Yeah, that may or may not be a little bit the that may or may not be legit post carrier destruction, right? Because now he doesn't have a command carrier to carry out the destruction with, and probably doesn't even have command given the way his conversation ended with the other lady. But subliminally,
Yeah,
subliminal.
you got
Anyway,
that, yeah.
in the back of his mind, that still has to weigh on him a little bit. That, if he does go home, he's bringing destruction to Earth. Although Scorpio already knows about Earth, so it's not like John going back there actually impacts that risk.
Yeah, and in reality, it would probably only be him and Aaron going back to Earth because obviously you couldn't take anybody else because obviously they would not fit in at all, except in his vision where everybody's like, hey, Dargo, high five, cool.
Yeah, I keep going back to I forget the name of the character, but where he imagined Dargo as the other pilot from NASA, IASA or whatever it was. What was the guy? What was the name for that character with the car and everything? Anyway,
Gary Regal.
Gary Regal. Yes. I keep picturing Gary Regal.
Gary Regal, dude, far out.
That's what I keep picturing every time I think about Dargo going to Earth. So those two are irrevocably mixed in my brain.
Another great episode. Not this season, though, so we can't talk about it. But
junk. Anyway.
So, yeah. So really the only choice he has is don't go home and stay where he is, you know, with Aaron. Well, except not anymore. But anyway, but you know, Aaron can't deal with this as she's leaving, or you know, or doesn't want to deal with it. The possibility of seeing him die again. Although, also, like he said, like he saw her die too, and she came back. So yeah, I mean, they're kind of both in the same boat here. So if you think about it, it's like they both died once. So I guess they want to see it happen again. Again, makes perfect sense. But you know, he can't have both his worlds. You know, because when she says, you know, make a home and go home, he's like, no, there's no home. There's only you. So his only option is to hope that, you know, fate, as they put it, brings them back together, because she's leaving regardless of what he says. And, you know, until she leaves and Harvey unlocks a little memory in his head that the old woman said Aaron's pregnant. It's like, you know, what? And then, of course, he's like, you know, we got to go get her back now because, you know, I can't just let her go now. And then for some reason, the wormhole opens up and sucks Moy away. I'm like, ooh. Okay, that's, again, like, John's like, what? So I'm with that one, too. So what do you think about that? Like, where'd that come from? Did John subconsciously cause it to appear? Did Harvey? Because he was quiet all up until that last couple seconds there. Or something else that we all know about that we'll have to wait for next season to find out.
Yeah, I guess, are we saying that Crichton could just wish up wormholes? Like, is that how learning the formulas that he's been writing down works, is now he can just think about them and they appear? Or is it still requires tech, right?
Or it's tied to his emotions. Like, yeah, is he now, like, you know, the wormhole summoner? Like,
yeah, that seems... I hope not. I hope they keep it technologically based. We don't need another superpowered related thing here. But either way, this plot with the old woman frustrated me, right? Mainly because even before he appeared, I kept wondering about Harvey, right? Why wasn't Harvey protecting him? You know, we showed in the last couple episodes that Harvey can kind of shield his stuff from Scorpy, right? Scorpy couldn't sense the lies and everything that he normally could do. So there's some control that Harvey has over the subconscious and the way Crichton's brain works. And yet this old woman, assuming that she was the one given the visions, right, was able to push her way in. And then what we end up with is a convenient, you know, oh, it's too late, everybody's already left. Here, let me unlock your memory now so we can dramatically end the season ending.
Yeah, and these visions weren't like when he was in his head with Harvey, because when he was doing that, he was just kind of like probably just sitting there in a daze or in his memory. Like, this is, he's actually acting out in the real world. Like, he was dancing with the old woman. He was shooting randomly in Moya when he was shooting in his dream, in his vision. So yeah, this is something different.
Yeah, if anything, it was closer to the ancients or whatever, the visions they gave him where he and Aaron went on Earth for a little while. That's probably the closest I could think of these visions, although these were all seemed to be just in his head, not whatever. So
yeah, I mean, maybe it's them somehow, right? Maybe they're...
Or related, yeah, to him unlocking the mental,
yeah,
stuff?
The wormhole tech, you know, the weird visions... them taking Moya away, although that doesn't make any sense, but I mean, it's something else. At least it's not the woman, it's not him, it's not Harvey, so it's somebody else doing it, which is as good a guess as any, and hopefully makes more sense than either thing we talked about, because that would be really weird and wouldn't make any sense. Of course, it's science fiction and Farscape. Does that make sense? It just has to be fun. All right, so that's kind of all I got. That's kind of the whole story in a nutshell. Anything we didn't mention?
No, I think we've kind of laid this one out. It's for a lot of episode, I feel like there was a lot of, I'd have made a pass at it, let's put it this way, right? There's some cutting I would have done or rearranging or something, because there's pieces of it I didn't really care for. There's pieces of it that I feel like are just furniture moving, getting us ready for next season, and maybe I just don't like the plot lines. I don't know. I pick it out a little bit, but meh.
Well, speaking of what's meh, what's not meh, let's do our big season wrap up here.
Yeah, so that's how I'm gonna categorize everything from now on. It's like, yeah, the good and the meh. Yeah.
The good, the bad, and the meh. So it's been almost a year and a half, like we said, since we started season 3. So given how stuff goes around these nowadays, I can't remember probably when we started going through the stuff. But looking back over the descriptions of episodes, I kind of made like a my list, and we'll see if you agree with this, of what I thought were like the really good ones and the meh or not so good ones, or maybe even the terrible ones. We'll see. Although going back over this stuff, it seems like, in my opinion, looking back, not going through our notes or seeing how we thought of the episodes as we did them, so feel free to criticize me later if I got something totally wrong. It seems like a lot of this season three were really good episodes.
I'll second that. I think overall, I think this was a very positive and more ups than downs for sure season, right? They kind of have hit the stride. There's some that we've picked at, but overall, definitely, I think trended upwards.
Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, because now like season three of a TV show, especially back in the day when you're doing 20 plus episodes a season, at this point you know your characters, and if you have a good writing staff who also knows the characters, or you can work with the writers to suggest things, I mean they're firing on all cylinders here. I mean everyone knows what they're doing, that they have an arc, they have a thing where they're going, and they're doing it. I mean so.
Yeah, although I'm sure as we get into the ones that you have picked out that you liked, I think we did have some character shakeups, so.
So of course, episode one of season three, Season of Death, part two, because that's what happened at the end of season two, cliffhanger. Crichton gets his neural chip out. Eren's resurrected by Zan. Yay! Everybody's alive again. Hey. Although then we go right into the episodes three and four, our first two-parter, the self-inflicted wounds double header there. We're learning that Zan is dying from healing Eren in the season premiere. We meet our latest crew member Jewel, who's been hanging around for the last 20 episodes. And then at the end of episode four, Zan sacrifices herself to save the crew.
Yeah, and I agree this goes in the positive because the story was really well done. I still miss Zan. I think she was a better character than Jewel, who still hasn't 20 episodes in. She's grown on me some, but I still don't quite have the affection I had for Zan for her yet, so.
Yeah, and then last episode when we were talking about how that two-parter was kind of like ended depressingly, and we're like, oh, we don't remember the two-parters being that bad, that depressing. Well, okay, this one was because Zan dies. So,
Yeah,
oops,
that's true.
forgot that one.
Oops.
Because again, long season, longest game through it, so forgot
Yeah.
about that. Forgot
With
that.
another multi-parter in the middle.
Yeah,
So we'll get there.
forgot that Zan died this season. So. Then we got the next episode after that, the Different Destinations, episode five, where Stark's abilities and some viewing goggles take them back in time to a famous peacekeeper battle, where, of course, because it's timey-wimey stuff, they have to make sure things go like they were supposed to go. So that was cool.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Then we get what started the rest of the season here, episode six, Eat Me, where Crichton gets twinned into Black John and Green John. And then episode seven, Thanks for Sharing, where they have to try to deal with the fact that they have two Crichtons. And I guess the best way to do it, which is kind of cool, was to split the crew up, half the crew and half the Johns going on Moya, and the other half go on Talon. And then we have the alternating episodes kind of after that of the different crews. So kind of cool.
And yeah, I think this worked out. I mean, I think by the end of it, we were ready for the crew to get back together, as our reviews probably indicate. But it was a neat turn of pace, right? And it got us emotionally attached to Aaron. It got emotionally attached to Talon, which he might not have been if he just kind of was hovering, following Moya around, right? So.
Yeah, and then we have like the Eren and one John love affair thing. And it's like, well, what about the other one when they finally meet up again? What's this guy gonna do? So yeah,
Yeah.
we're kind of wondering where that was gonna go. So it's kind of cool. And then jumping forward a little bit, we got to episode 10, Relativity, where we meet Eren's mother, Zalak's son, and get all the kind of backstory on her, and she had to kill her dad and that kind of thing, that kind of thing. And of course, she appears to die at the end by Kreis. Haha,
Oh,
wink,
yeah,
wink.
absolutely. Kreis
Yeah, of
killed her.
course.
I'm
Yep.
sure of it.
Then we have the episode 11, Incubator, where we get to learn all about the backstory of Scorpius, which is awesome. I love when they have time to delve into the backstory of your villain, who of course doesn't think of himself as a villain. He thinks of himself as a hero trying to save the peacekeepers and this section of the galaxy from his Skaren half-brethren or whatever. So always love those kind of stories. And then we get our second two-parter, episodes 14 and 15, Infinite Possibilities, where we meet our friend Furlough again from, I'm gonna forget now, season one?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Jack the Ancient shows up again. Always fun. Helps that Crichton unlock the wormhole knowledge in his head because they have to stop the Skarens, who are also stealing that technology. And only for that Jack to be killed in the second episode. Oops. Maybe permanently, maybe not. Don't know yet. We'll find out. And this John dies from radiation poisoning from that weapon that they used to destroy the Dreadnought. We get to see what a wormhole weapon actually is, which is pretty nasty. So yeah, I can see why they're all against that. And we get, the amazing like ending scenes where John's dying in Talon, his deathbed on Talon, and the crew are saying their goodbyes, and then, he dies in Eren's arms in the end. Awesome.
Yeah, with repercussions we're still dealing with.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Then after that depressing ending, we jump into episode 16, Revenging Angel, which is a mostly 90% animated episode in Crichton's head. And what can I say? That's probably one of the best. That was just so off the wall and just wacky Looney Tunes, literally, episode. I loved it. It was amazing.
Yeah, I think in retrospect, that's probably one of the top ones of the season right there. I think that gets a gold star.
Yeah, because something you would not expect. Nowadays, they've done some of that, like I think we said in the episode, they've done some animation / live action kind of stuff. Most recently, I think, with the latest Star Treks. But yeah, it's I love it when they just go completely off theme. Just
yeah, it totally Roger Rabbit did. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
And jump ahead a little bit to episode 19, the I Yinch, Yu Yinch, which we talked about a little bit before, where Talon goes completely mental and destroys a medical ship and almost Moya, and they have to shut him down. And then we get some nice little Scorpion Rigel moments when they're on the planet and kind of having a moment with each other. So, and then probably, of course, our third and final two-parter of the season, episodes 20 and 21, Into the Lion's Den, where John and company try to destroy Scorpius' wormhole research on the command carrier, but they can't. So they decide to blow up the whole thing. But unfortunately, in order to do that, Krayce and Talon have to make the ultimate sacrifice and do that, and we lose them. And we get to meet the possible future bad. I'm not going to go into it. You'll find out. Next season, Commandant Graza.
So. Which I'm looking forward to. She seemed like a pretty good bad guy. So.
Yeah, they do bad guys pretty well with Farscape, or bad people. Antagonists, I guess they do. All right, so then the meh, or the bad, if you're calling it that, which wasn't much. So we get episode 9, Losing Time, where we have an energy being who can take over people, tries to hide from another energy being, hunting it, and okay, whatever. Yeah. Although we do get to see, there's always something good in bad episodes. And this one, we get to learn or see more about Moya, and we get to see the Starburst Chamber for the first time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you criticize what you love, but so there are always some good things in these. But yeah, I think that's a good one to call out as a little repetitive. I feel like we've been here before.
Mm-hmm. And we got episode 12, Meltdown, where some odd creature living either in another dimension or in a star, near a star, whatever, is drawing ships and souls into it. Okay, sure. And, Stark gets involved with a woman trapped there and has to help her, which, good. Again, the good point, it's got some good Stark moments, but
yeah.
Other than that.
And I think this is where I'm going to add, believe it or not, episode 22. Yes, this episode's episode we reviewed to the meh list because, I know it has to do some furniture moving, as I've mentioned, setting up the cliffhanger between the seasons. Man, it just frustrated me across the board. Like, all the points felt like they were just like one notch from being right onto me. They were just like not clicking.
Yeah, I mean, I probably put it in the meh category if we're having a third category.
Yeah, it's a meh, as in I may put it with these other two. So yeah.
And of course, I don't know how many we talked about, like at least half the season, if not more. So yeah, the other half were, okay. Nothing to write home about, but, still good, still move things along. And it was fun with the alternating crews, like the one with the Budong. It was kind of a cute idea, but, was it fantastic? No, but it was fun. Yeah.
Well, obviously we like the show, so the episodes we may not call out just are good episodes, right?
Solid, yeah. I mean, if it's not like amazingly wonderful, like the ones we talked about that have earth-shaking ramifications or great character things or just insane, let's have an animated episode in the middle of a live episode series.
Yeah, but they also didn't make enough of an impression to make the bad list. So,
right. Yeah. So, solid episodes. Yeah. So, yeah, overall, fantastic season. One more to go, plus the 2.5 hour or 3 hour movie to come after that, two-parter after that. So, yep, almost done.
Oh,
but we're not done yet. So next time,
it took us what, year and a half to do this, so we're good.
Yeah, so we'll see how long it takes. Start the clock. How long? Yeah, so next time we'll kick off the final season of Farscape, Season 4, with Episode 1, Crichton Kicks. Here we go again. Okay, so playing the usual game of what does that mean? Nope, no idea. Crichton's alone in space, at least at the moment. So if he does get back to Moya, it's only him and Jewel. So maybe they're going to kicking back, relaxing on a mostly empty ship, because that's the only two of them left other than Pilot. So, I don't know. Or something else could totally happen. I don't know. He kicks somebody. I don't know. I mean,
I'm going in on he gets a new pair of shoes, right? Yeah, Crichton's kicks. So
he learns kung fu. I don't know. Something. Yeah. Who knows?
Ooh. And he's got plenty of time on his hands. Yeah. Nowhere to go. So hope he packs some crackers.
Yeah. Well, but they don't matter though. So
they wouldn't matter if that's all you got in the show.
Although, if that's all, yeah. Because, yeah, does he have any food in there? How long is he going to be in the ship? You know, so he's got no fuel and no food. So, you know, how long does his air last in his little module, right? We never talk about that.
Well, it's Farscape. They don't breathe in space, so he'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, they're out in space, him and Dargo, the end of Season 1. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's all I got. So that's next time on the Farscape episode, or part of the episode. So if you want to hang around after the really brief Bad Bats theme music, because it only last about 5 seconds because they don't have a theme song, and we'll talk about the Bad Batch. Otherwise, you can drop off here and we'll see you for Farscape next time.
Next season.
All right, so third and final season of the Bad Batch. The so far current only animated Marvel Disney thing running at the moment.
Yeah, until X-Men, but yeah, agreed.
Yes, until another week or three when X-Men comes out. Yeah. All right, so yeah, we'll just kind of do the alternating quick recap, and then we'll kind of talk about it a little bit. All right, Episode 1, Confined. So following her capture, Omega, or Omega if you're Australian or New Zealand, becomes part of the Imperial Cloning Division against her will. As we saw from the flashbacks from last season. One of her tasks consists of taking blood samples from the clones, alongside Emery Carr, who is a clone of Omega, as you remember. But Omega becomes suspicious when Emery also takes Omega's blood, only for Analise to just discard the sample in secret every single time Omega gives it to her. She also evades the guards to speak with her fellow Bad Batch, or ex-Bad Batch member Crosshair, who's there in prison after what happened last season, who attempts to discourage her from escaping Mount Tantus. She befriends a Lurka hound named Batcher. Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. And the Imperials decide to euthanize Batcher. She frees the hound, which escaped into the jungles of Wayland. And Dr. Hemlock warns Omega that further defiance will result in consequences, not for her, but for Crosshair.
And that leads us into Episode 2, Paths Unknown, which switches us over to Hunter and Wrecker. So after gaining intel from the Durand crime family, Hunter and Wrecker travel to an abandoned Imperial cloning facility Hemlock was in charge of. The pair runs into Mox, Zeke, and Stack, clone cadets who were held prisoner by Hemlock before managing to escape as the Empire destroyed the facility. Zeke helps Hunter and Wrecker enter the facility while evading Slithervines, an Imperial experiment gone awry. Meanwhile, Mox and Stack manage to find the Marauder. While Zeke is gathering intel, the trio are attacked by other Slithervines, which are revealed to be the tentacles of a huge monster.
Of course.
Mox and Stack are able to extract the three before defeating the creatures with explosives. Because, you know, the Marauder has no security. Hunter then promises to take the cadets to Pabu.
And we got Episode 3, Shadows of Tantus. So now we're back on Tantus, because that's the title. There you go.
Or at least in the shadow of it.
Yeah. Well, I got the evil shadow, Emperor Palpatine, who's traveling to Mount Tantus to learn all about the progress of Project Necromancer, which we'll talk about in a minute. After Emery takes a sample of Omega's blood, Nalase warns Omega that she is in danger and urges her to escape using a datapad with access to the facility and the shuttles. And more on that in a minute, too. Omega frees Crosshair, and upon learning that all shuttles are grounded because of Palpatine's visit, they escape through the Lurker tunnels, which has a like shoots to the outside, and they find the crash shuttle that we kind of saw in the first episode. Emery attempts to stop them, but is stunned by Crosshair, which inadvertently triggers an alarm. After taking care of a search team chasing after them, Crosshair and Omega, joined by Batcher, steal their shuttle, but end up being pursued. And however, after learning from the Emery that the M count required for Project Necromancer can be replicated with Omega's blood, Hemlock calls off the pursuit since they need Omega alive.
And we pretty much pick up right from there with episode 4, A Different Approach. With the damage to their shuttle sustained in their escape, Omega and Crosshair are forced to crash land on the planet Lao. They make their way to a nearby spaceport where Crosshair opts for using Force to hijack a ship, while Omega intends to acquire the money needed to bribe a clerk through gambling. When Batcher is snatched by Imperial troops, Omega goes after her, with a reluctant Crosshair following. Imperial troops find and corner them, but they manage to free Batcher, steal a freighter, and escape the planet. Later, they rendezvous with Hunter and Wrecker, leading to both a joyous and, in Crosshair's case, tense reunion.
And then we pick up right after that, in episode 5, The Return. So despite the other's tolerance of Crosshair's presence and Omega's encouragement, Crosshair still struggles with the repercussions of his betrayal and captivity from last season. Echo returns to Pabu, and together the batch discusses the experiments conducted on the clones at Tantus. And to get more details from Nalase's datapad, as we mentioned before, they reluctantly follow Crosshair's suggestion to connect it to an Imperial computer terminal at his former post on Barton 4. They find that depot abandoned and are forced to divert power from its defense perimeter, and of course, that invites a huge worm to attack them. Setting aside the differences, the batch work together to lure the creature outside the perimeter before activating an auxiliary power source that reactivates the defenses. With Crosshair having earned his squadmate's trust back,
and his armor,
and with the information that they recovered, the batch sets out to free their brothers at Mount Tantus. All right, so that's the first 5 that we got to, because 5 just came out a couple days ago. So yeah, it's, nice start to the season, as always. I do appreciate the recap of last season at the start of episode 1, which is always nice, since I don't go back and watch the previous season again before the new season comes out. Just don't have the time and too much stuff to do. I like that they devoted most of the first 2 episodes entirely to what's going on in Mount Tantus. We don't really get much at all, if anything, with the other clones in the batch. So we really get to learn what they're doing there and how that kind of does tie into what we saw with Rise of Skywalker, right? That Hemlock's trying to perfect the communal cloning process, but for Force users, and probably more specifically, only the Emperor, which we saw tons of him in that movie. Literally tons and tons of Emperor clones again. And also, if you think about it, and remember, that's the same thing that Moff Gideon was doing in the last season of The Mandalorian, making clones of himself and giving himself midichlorians to become Force-sensitive. So it's kind of all ties in here together, which is kind of funny because I thought the Empire didn't like clones because they're trying to get rid of them all, except when it benefits them personally.
Yeah. So for me, I'm up for anything Tantus. So I'm really enjoying this storyline they're using. I'd love to see them resurrect some of the clone storylines from the old expanded universe, which I guess they're now called Legends. But, we had Jorus Sibuth and Luuk and several clones. But yet they're also kind of picking from that. And you referenced the stuff from Rise of Skywalker and Moff Gideon. I think this is an interesting way to bridge what we had in the prequels, if we acknowledge that they exist, and then getting into the Rise of Skywalker, it's kind of bridging the two, right? So, that there was a lot of complaint. I liked the movie, but there was a lot of complaint, probably rightly so, of how the return of Palpatine was handled in Rise of Skywalker, right? So, one of the things that Filoni has always done really well in the animated series, right? Because this is a spinoff of Clone Wars, for Bad Batch. And it's kind of neat to take one of the things that the Clone Wars did was make everybody have positive emotional ties to the prequels, right? Because it took the characters from the prequel movies and gave us a whole lot more story, right? A whole lot more clones. I mean, if you made it through 7 seasons of Clone Wars, you're way more attached to those characters than you were in the movies, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an interesting way to do that same thing with Rise of Skywalker and the cloning of Palpatine that got thrown out there. And there's so much to do in the middle that you can leverage from the Legends or Expanded Universe material. So, they've kind of leaned into that a little bit with bringing, what's the Zahn stuff, Thrawn, mm-hmm. into some of the other series. So there's a lot of possibilities of where we can go. I'm excited about the cloning. So,
yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes, because if it's the last season, I don't know if they're going to wrap up some of it in like the supposed movie where they wrap stuff up in. That might be more the live action stuff. So if this is like the final wrap up to the animated stuff for the last like 7 years plus the three here, yeah, because obviously the Republic or the Old Republic made lots of clones, however many hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many there were to fight the droid army. So there were lots of them running around. And then by the time Luke talks to Obi-Wan in Star Wars, he's like, "You fought in the Clone Wars?" Like it's like an afterthought. It's like it happened like a long time ago, and where are all these clones? So it's fun, it's to see where like how they went from all these clones to like it being an afterthought, like 20 years later or however many years later.
Well, we know that Rebels, which is I think the closest material we've got to A New Hope, the only clone that's kicking it are, well, the three is, Rex, Wolf, and what's the other one I'm forgetting? Grigor. So, there weren't a lot of clones pulled into service that you saw. So it's interesting. There's some gap there.
Yeah, so like whether they're like built-in expiration dates in the clones, which we can talk about later with Crosshair here, but yeah, or lots of experiments and just getting rid of the clones and experiments and stuff. Yes, something happened to oh you're free, the war's done, you're free, which that was the fun part of last season, trying to figure out how do clones reintegrate with society when they were never part of society. So that's kind of fun. So it's fun just to see all these little things of stuff you didn't think about, but because of the Clone Wars and this stuff, it's like and where they went with it. After the fact, which we talk about the Skywalker and Mandalorian, it's like, yeah, how did like where'd they go? Like, what happened to them? So yeah, we'll see how it pays off here in the last season. We'll see. So, and Omega gets a new little friend, the Lurka. That she named Batcher. That's playing off the Bad Batch names. It's kind of funny.
I totally missed that.
I didn't get it until I was like recapping. I'm like, oh, Batcher, Batch. Hey, I get it.
It doesn't help. She says "batcha,"
Yeah, I
so
mean, you have to like see the word before. But yeah, so I guess she's really part of the crew now, right? She's no longer a sidekick-ish kind of character because now she's got her own sidekick with Batcher.
yeah, you got to have a mascot, right? That is one interesting point, though, because one of the things that's not really super clear is the time jump between last season and this season. They did a little bit of minor aging up on Omega, but hair wise and things like that. And that it's been long enough that Echo is off with Rex, and it's just Wrecker and Hunter, doing the intel missions and searching. So, and you get the impression they've been at it a while. So, don't think years. We're thinking months here, probably, right? But still, it's kind of interesting to have a time jump.
Yeah, because was I just misremembering and just thinking it's your typical prison kind of cell thing? Was she like scratching like something into the wall, like how long she was there? Or no,
Yeah,
am I just imagining that and
no,
thinking?
there were tick marks. The question is, and I'm sure somebody who actually freeze framed it and wrote that down, but you don't know if those are days, weeks, right? Like, which you don't know the scope, but I'm leaning on months at least. So.
Yeah, because it's just same boring thing every day, and you just see like every time she's doing the same thing, same stuff. It's like
Well, she had time to scavenge enough stuff to make a stuffed animal. And so,
Yeah, she had the whole thing down of how to smuggle it into her little carry-on, whatever, her little lunch pail, whatever,
And you get the impression based on how they took it from her that it's not the first one she's made, right? So.
Yeah, that they know to search her quarters for stuff, right? So, and yeah, so it's nice to see Crosshair continuing to come around to the reality that he's just a tool and a prisoner of the Empire, and he's just gonna be experimented upon until he dies. So, clones are on the way out. His days are numbered. But of course he's still Crosshair. He's still the gruff person that he was we've seen before. He's trying to get drive Omega away, like leave me alone, stop coming here. But yeah, that doesn't work. She breaks him out. We get a kind of buddy criminal, buddy cop, buddy comedy show as they escape and land the other planet and have to keep working together. Although he wants to do one thing his way, she wants to do it her way. So it's kind of fun. Which and then of course when they do escape, where they're gonna go afterwards. So it's interesting to see, as we'll talk about in a minute, like how Hunter and Wrecker act towards him. It's like you're wondering, like, oh, because they kind of have that like, kind of weird standoff where she's all happy and hugs them and like, oh, we're back, and they look over and it's like, oh, you.
Yeah, plus, as you kind of indicated, you've got some form of damage or breakdown preventing him from being as deadly a shot, right? So you've got a sniper who's no longer super accurate. So that makes the character a little more interesting to me as well. But yeah, I will say I was kind of surprised because I was expecting him to drag that out, right? Even though they escaped, I was figuring we'd get like a good part of the first half of the season before they reunited the characters. On one hand, those would be kind of cool adventures. On the other, there's probably a lot of story left to tell. And so I'm kind of glad they resolved that pretty quick and got the characters back together, because now we can get a lot more time to focus on the cloning and the stuff they need to close it out.
Yeah, because again, you know, limited series, although it is like whatever, 12, 15 episode, whatever it is, it's a long episode, it's a long season compared to other seasons, but...
Yeah, but if you know this is the end, but there's got a lot of stuff to move.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts to wrap up here and maybe set up for another thing after this, not with them, or who knows.
Yeah, maybe they'll just rename it and it'll still be the same characters, because I hate for it to end.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, Crosshair is having some issue, whatever it is, we don't know yet. You know, is it genetic? Is it clones weren't supposed to last that long? So, you know, there's something, you know, they weren't properly engineered to last that long, or something's breaking down from that. Maybe all the experiments from trying to get, you know, the Emperor's little midichlorian clones is messing them up. Who knows?
But, well, we know that they were fast aged, right? Because they were prepared for the battlefield, so they had an accelerated aging, whereas Omega didn't. That's one of the things that she references, right? That she's actually older than they are. Even though she's a kid. So.
Yeah. And those three kids from the other episode, there are three clones that weren't aged, you know, or at least, you know, stopped at whatever, preteen, wherever they were. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's roughly, if I'm going off of some of the stuff we had in the Clone Wars series, I feel like they get them up to like maybe that about that age or a little bit older before they don't take them crazy old. So.
Yeah. And just go from there with like just, you know, living and training. Although, you know, I guess you had to have some kind of fast track for the war. Then after that, maybe they kind of, you know, ramp them down a little, but whatever. Yeah. Again, interesting stuff that they all have to wrap up, and it's fun to see how they went from lots of clones to none, or like a couple. And yeah, in between that, before they all grouped up again, we got the Hunter and Wrecker episode, because, you know, they're still around. You know, Echo's gone off, and the other guy, I can't remember. And yeah, that's okay. You know, we have the usual Star Wars trope of, you know, the giant creature with a huge mouth trying to eat everybody. You know, okay, you know, Star Wars, that's, you know. Up until the next episode, I'm cool with it. So, you know, we get the clone children almost stealing the ship, but having second thoughts. And, you know, at least this time they locked the hatch when they left. So they had to break in, unlike the last time where the guy just walked in and took the ship. So at least they're learning.
Yeah, are they? Anyway.
Yeah, well.
I will say I thought a plant-based Sarlacc was a pretty cool villain, right? Because, you know, you've got the Sarlacc in the desert, and now you've got this plant thing. So I think that was one of the more formidable, scary monsters they dealt with. You know, Bad Batch deals with a lot of monsters, yeah, both figurative and literal, but of the literal monsters, this was one of my favorites. So
yeah, and that's probably the biggest one if you think about how, I don't know how big the area around that installation was where all the vines, which weren't really vines, were, but it went out far away, so this thing could have been potentially really huge
and expanding, right? Because they keep saying they lose sectors to the vines. So
or maybe there's more than one. Who knows?
I don't know, because they could walk. That's the other freaky thing, right? So yeah. Anyway, that was well done.
Yeah. And of course, next episode, where everybody's together and they go out to the ice planet, we got another giant creature out to attack them. But, you know, it's different because, you know, this one's an ice planet, not jungle. So, you know, come on, guys. At this point, I'm like, okay, enough of the giant creatures.
Yeah. Like you said, it's a Star Wars trope after all, but agreed. This was more about forcing the team to work together than it was about the monster.
Yeah, and going to an abandoned, you know, Imperial outpost, you wouldn't have had any of that kind of stuff. So that's be something. You know, I was thinking they'd be attacked by, you know, like those bandits he mentioned were there, and, you know, they killed them all. Maybe not. You know, now they're there, but bandits wouldn't have been kept out by like a subsonic thing. So it had to be some kind of animal thing. Okay, fine. And, you know, it wasn't like, you know, a run through like ice tunnels or tunnels. You know, we had, you know, sand tunnels in Rise of Skywalker. Now you got ice tunnels in this one. So, you know, again, it's all related. It's all comfortable. It's all, you know, I've seen it before.
Yeah, and it keeps the theme of one environment per planet. So,
Yeah. So overall, you know, the first five, I liked it. You know, this last one, it's nice that they've come full circle from season one, and, you know, Crosshair understands them. He understands that, you know, and they understand him, where he's coming from. You know, they might agree with what he did, but, you know, they're willing to put it in the past and continue on. You know, so now everybody's back together. Well, more or less. We'll maybe talk about that in a second. And off to Tantus to save everybody else. Or not. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, without Tech, you know, see, end of sad last season. It's good to have Crosshair back with the group. I'm not sure how long or if they plan to keep Echo around, because he keeps going off with Rex. So more or less, So it's good to have another one of the original members, not just Hunter and Wrecker, because I think that was one of the more weak parts of that episode was that the second episode was that, you know, I like both those characters, but I feel like by themselves, it's kind of a tough sell. So it's great to have, I think that's part of the reason they had the kids was they didn't feel like they had enough characters, right? So having Crosshair back, plus if this, you know, is going to wrap up the season, it's important to get the characters back pretty early so they can kind of move towards the finale, right? So.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm still in the camp of Tech isn't dead yet until I see a body. All we saw was his goggles, which, you know, that's the usual trope of, oh, no, he's dead, which that's just what he wore. It's not him. So still hoping. You know, we got another 10 episodes or so. Never know, but, yeah, well, I mean, you know, all the clones got to die sometime. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah, I guess Clone Wars kind of made me feel like that they're a little more final. I mean, occasionally they'd bring him back. I mean, Echo's one of the ones that did come back when you thought he was dead, but it doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah, and if you're trying to ramp up the tension and the finale and the, you know, finale of stuff, you know, in the show and the heroes don't die, it's like, oh, okay, well, they're not going to be in any danger. Well, okay, maybe not. So, but yeah, so I get it, but I like Tech the best. So I hope he's still alive. Even though it's the same guy voicing them, but, you know, still, it's... All right, any kind of anything else to mention that we didn't already talk about so far, these first five?
No, I think we hit the high points, right? I mean, we talked about the M counts, we talked about the clones, we talked about the stories. You know, I think I'll just, you know, say this a lot, but I really like this show, and I hate that we're going to be in the final season just because I don't like it, the end. Hopefully they'll give us something just as good to come after it. But like you said, we've got a ways to go yet, so we'll enjoy the trip and get there eventually.
So yeah, so next time for this part, in addition to what we talked about before, if you stay with us, we'll kick off the season 4 of Farscape, but we'll also keep going with season 3 of Bad Batch here, with however many episodes are out before we record next time. Could be 2, could be 1, could be 3, who knows? So check out the show notes for the show title, and that's what we did, pretty much.
Sounds fair.
And with that, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.